thank you everybody for coming. We'll just get started here. If more people want to come, they can just come sit down. I'll pray and then we'll get into the workshop. Father, thank you for today. Lord, thank you for the blessing it is that we get to come together as a church and learn how to serve you better by serving each other better. Lord, I thank you for all that we have learned so far in this workshop. And God, I pray that you just continue to teach us and show us how you would have us care for one another and encourage one another, especially in times such as grief. In your son's name I pray, amen. So last month, we talked about things we can do for others to be there for them, physically present. And we had Mary Beth come and share. She opted not to have her testimony recorded, so if you guys want to hear about that, you'll just have to ask her in person. What she had to share was really helpful, so I recommend you do. We also talked about emotions and feelings and how not necessarily everything we feel is correct or comes from a place of truth, so we need to engage with our emotions and our feelings and find out where they're coming from. So one of the examples I gave was if I'm upset with somebody for their stubbornness and I'm arguing with them and I'm just so mad at them because they're being stubborn, maybe I would look at what I'm feeling and find out they're not actually that stubborn. I just think my opinion matters more than theirs. And so really I'm being the stubborn one. And that's just one example. It's not always the case if someone else is being stubborn, but it's just one example of how we can examine ourselves, what we're feeling, and be able to figure out the source of that emotion or feeling so that we can deal with it accordingly. Today we're going to be talking about grieving as a family, how different family members grieve differently because they're different people, as well as social media use. So to start, I'd like to thank the Newdorfs for being willing to share. I'll invite them both up here. So to start, thank you guys for being willing to share again. It's been almost a year since the passing of Constance, and I'm really grateful that you guys are willing to share, especially since because it's close to a year anniversary, it might be more fresh for you guys. Could you just briefly share with us what caused you two to grieve as a family?
So the grief that we have shared as a family is the loss of two children. In 2022, we had an early miscarriage between Molly and Sophia, and more recently, our daughter Constance, which is Atticus's twin sister. She passed away shortly after birth because of a fatal kidney condition that she had.
What differences did you see in each other in how you grieved? And I'll have you both answer that.
I think for me, like, I grieved more outwardly, like wanting to talk about how I was feeling, even though it was sad and hard, but just to kind of talk about, my feelings or having lots of moments to think and process and to cry. I have also really treasured looking at photographs that we have, and we have a recording of her heartbeat that I like to listen to, and also like doing writing and journaling and things like that.
In contrast, I like to think about it and kind of grieve more internally. And one of the things that I would always remind myself or say to myself is that, you know, God's goodness is not dependent upon my life circumstances. So even though the trial is very difficult, that doesn't change whether or not God is good. And so in knowing that and trusting and believing in that, recognizing that, you know, our suffering isn't going to be a waste. It's not like God sitting on his throne thinking, you know what, I know it will get Damien to be angry or sad or, you know, make him have a hard time. You know, and I also know he's not doing that to, he's not giving us these trials to, just to make our life harder than it needs to be. But like there's purpose in it. He's going to use it in ways that we'll figure out later in life. We don't know why we went through these things, but one day we will, and maybe that day will only come after we are gone in heaven with her. So,
I think that's just really encouraging that even almost a year later, you're still holding on to that assurance that there's something that will come out of it.
Oh, one more thing too. One thing I also found really helpful was just writing, journaling, just writing about my thoughts, my feelings, just the experience in general, just getting it on paper just to get what I was thinking out of my mind and like, yeah, onto a written page so I can go back to it if I wanted.
Well, what was most helpful for each of you that others did that helped you grieve?
Some things that were really helpful for me were just people saying that they were thinking of us or praying for us. Like a lot of people gave us cards after Constance passed away. So those are really special. And I have also appreciated people remembering milestones like the anniversary of when we first found out or like her birthday coming up and just kind of days like that. And we also really appreciated like how many people from this church specifically came to her service. It wasn't really a funeral, but kind of the memorial service that we had for her.
It took my answer, but yeah, just in summary, I guess, acts of acknowledgement was really huge. I know I was tempted to think or feel just terribly alone in this because nobody that we knew from this church, from our other church, from our extended family or anything has gone through a similar trial. But so feeling alone in that, but then having people, whether that be through card or text or in person or phone call or whatever, made me feel like I wasn't alone, that they're thinking of us, praying for us, loving us still. So we really appreciated that again. Really appreciate everybody that came to her service, despite the fact that it was on a Friday and minus 800 and in PA and, you know, so really, and I know that more people would have come had it not been those circumstances, but despite them, a lot of people came and a lot more than I thought. So yeah, we really appreciated that. And just continued asking and checking in too.
And the opposite of that question, what was the least helpful for you guys as others tried to help you grieve?
I think like it was hard for me to think of an answer to this question because I just feel like we were cared for so well, specifically by our church family. It's really hard to think of examples of things that happened that were unhelpful. But maybe one thing that I thought of was just some maybe thoughtless comments, like not that they were meant to be hurtful, but just people just weren't thinking. Things like, oh, at least you still have one baby, or if someone said that like Atticus and another baby were like twins, that one kind of stung because he has a twin.
Oh, on the other side of the coin, yeah, there's no acknowledgement. Not that that super happened here, but I know in our extended family, it just wasn't brought up. Everybody kind of ignored it, shoved it underneath the rug, and it's kind of like, maybe we are alone. But I don't know. And like, we understand that the people that made these comments don't go here, but they weren't trying to, you know, be malicious in their intent. But at the same time, I'm sure if they would have had a second chance, they probably wouldn't have said those things. But
I'll skip the next question to the one after, and then we'll go back to it. But what was it like trying to manage a household during this time?
I think for me, like just thinking about, like caring for our other kids, it's a good thing, but also a hard thing. Like on the one hand, it's good because I have other people to care for, so it helps me to be motivated, and I can't just sit and be sad all day. But then it's hard because sometimes I do have sad days where I don't actually want to do anything, or I do feel quite unmotivated. And so then it's hard to still have to do the things that I have to do, and care well for our family. I think, kind of like caring for our kids and their emotional well-being. One thing that I love is that Constance is still very much a part of the vocabulary of our home. We talk about her and we look at pictures, and like often she gets brought up if we're talking about heaven or about Jesus being in heaven. And sometimes the girls will say that they miss her. So then just being able to help them walk through their feelings, helps me even to just kind of counsel my own heart and just to remind them, like, yeah, Constance is with Jesus, and that's like a really great place to be. And we also have a couple of books to help kids understand about infant loss, and so those have been really helpful, like just reading them for the kids and just to kind of help explain things, I guess.
Before you answer, Damien, I'm just really encouraged by that comment about how in counseling your own children, you're counseling yourself. You're not just talking to them. You're talking to yourself. We talked a bit about that last month. Mm-hmm. So that's just really encouraging.
Yeah. Obviously, being a leader of the home, I'm probably not perfect. Let me rephrase that. I'm not perfect. But what I meant in that was, like, I don't know what I'm doing with this. Like, I've never experienced this type of loss. And even in my extended family, like, we haven't had very many deaths. Like, all my grandparents are alive, minus one. And even he died when I was one, if I was born at all. And so to have to try to wrestle through what's going on and how to shepherd my own heart, but then also trying to lead Emily and the girls through it is challenging. One of the things I was thinking about, though, that I wanted to be clear with our girls was that if ever they were to ask us, and I made sure that my in-laws and my parents knew, if they ever asked, like, why? Like, why did God allow this to happen? I wanted them to respond with, we don't know, but we do know that God is good and we can trust him. And even in saying that and sharing that with the girls, just, again, what Emily was saying, bolstered my own heart. It's like, yeah, he is good. We can still trust him. And again, my other mantra is, you know, his goodness is not dependent upon my life circumstances. And so it's been challenging to lead in that way. And I'm not perfect in that because, it's hard to lead someone somewhere while you're still trying to figure out kind of how to get there. So there's no map that I had to go on. Anyways, if that makes sense.
So we're at about a year later. How does the grief still affect you today?
I guess I'll go first. It comes and goes in waves, it seems like. Some days are better than others. Even some hours are better than others. But I think I'm always reminded of Ecclesiastes 3, talking about the idea of there's a time for everything, you know, a time for sorrow and a time for joy. So just, you know, well, in our situation too, it's very unique in the sense of one baby is doing well, super healthy, exactly what you want. The other baby is not. And so, like, you want to be happy, you want to be sad, you don't know which one is which. Like, when do you do which one? So just thinking of Ecclesiastes 3, if you're feeling sad, then be sad. Like, you don't have to be guilty that you're not happy. Then if you're happy, then be happy. You don't have to be guilty that you're sad, because that's just a situation that you're in. And of course it's going to be happy and sad and bittersweet and, you know, back and forth, to and fro. But yeah, lately I've been, you know, not every day, but often looking at Atticus and just kind of wondering, you know, how far along Constance would be. You know, would she be crawling? Would she be babbling? Would she be sitting up by herself? Would she be doing this or doing that? Or, you know, what kind of, like, I don't know if you could say this, but starting to maybe see kind of Atticus's personality. So wondering, oh, I wonder how she would have reacted or how she would have just been here, and just, yeah, how different that would be to have four instead of three in that way.
Yeah, I guess for me, kind of like with Damien, it like comes and goes. Like, there are some moments or days that are quite sad. I would say that I still think about her every day. Some days more than others. Like, some days I just have more space maybe to just kind of sit with that and think and reflect. And sometimes I still write in my journal, just like if I'm reminded of her or if there's something I feel like I learned because of her life. Yeah. So.
I'll put you on the spot with a question here. What did God teach you through this year and this process?
Good question. As even going through that time and after the time, and I'm not saying I've learned these lessons perfectly, still learning them, still needing to grow in them, but I can definitely, definitely see and say with confidence that this trial has grown me in ways that I don't know how they would have been possible for me to grow any other way. Lessons I've learned that I don't know would be possible to learn in any other way is another way you could say it. So one thing, one area of that is trust and faith. You know, as a husband, as a father, as a man, my tendency is wanting to fix things, you know, put a wrench on it, turn it, you know, WD-40 or whatever it is. But with it being a medical issue, that is just, that's so far and above my scope, my interests, my ability, my skills, and just, you know, and even the doctors, like, we were given quite a few options. All of them were not ethical, safe, or worth it. And so doctors can't do anything. I can't do anything. Well, where am I going to go? Well, obviously that's God. So learning to trust in, his sovereignty in it. Another area is, I think, faith. A few weeks ago, in the sermon, we were talking about how, I believe it was God gives you faith when you need it the most. And I just remember it was the weekend before the weekend that we were induced. Emily comes upstairs. We're at my parents' house, and I see her on her phone. She has her app out, and I know the app fairly well. It's the app that kept track of her contractions. And I thought, uh-oh. And I look at her and she looks at me and she gives me the telepathical, like, it might happen. And my heart just sank. I really, 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 with everything that I had, did not want to have to go through that. But alas, the time has come. And so despite not wanting to be there or go through that or anything, obviously we didn't have a choice, so we had to. And I made it on the other side, got some battle scars, but God was good through the whole thing and he was faithful. And I don't know, I guess those are two lessons that I learned during this time.
I think one thing that I learned was just that, like, it's okay and it's good to be vulnerable. Just like sharing our experience or sharing my feelings or my grief with other people, and just being okay to cry or to just be really honest about how I was feeling, was good for me to learn that. And I think another thing, like, I've just grown so much in my appreciation for the gospel. And just knowing that God's is there in heaven, and that I'll get to see her again, and I wouldn't be able to if not for Jesus. So, yeah.
Thank you for sharing. May I pray for you guys? Father, thank you for our dear brother, Damien, and our dear sister, Emily. God, thank you for being a rock for them in this trial that's still ongoing. Lord, we know that this faith they have came from you. Thank you for that. It is a gift. And God, I thank you for how through your comforting them, they are able to comfort us, and how we're able to join them in rejoicing in your mercy and what you've done in sending your son to die on the cross for us and for Constance. God, I pray that you just continue to be with them as they continue to suffer this trial. May they become even closer to you than this has already brought them, and learn more of your goodness. God, thank you that there is a purpose in this, and that we already do get to see some of that in their testimony and their faith and how they encourage this church with it. In your son's name I pray, amen. Thank you, guys. Wow, how do we continue after that? So we saw from what Damon and Emily shared that different family members grieve differently. And we heard this in the first session in October. So that can be quite difficult when we're grieving ourselves and we're trying to help our family at the same time. Damien talked about, and Emily, how they needed to lead their family, but at the same time they needed to lead themselves in a way. And so all this to say that we shouldn't expect family members to grieve the same way we do, right? So in the family setting, if we're hit with a situation that brings us to grieve together, it's important to, like I said, to recognize that different members of the family will grieve differently. Spouses will grieve differently from each other. And I think it's really important that spouses recognize this right from the outset. One person might get a lot from visiting the cemetery, and the other doesn't. And the other will get a lot from rewatching the funeral video, while the other doesn't. That's okay. Those people can come together from their different methods of grieving, and then they could grieve together and hold each other all the same as they weep. So I think what's important is that there's a mutual understanding between, if you're married, you and your spouse, that you're going to grieve different, and you can encourage each other in that process. We heard that Emily needed to talk about it, to verbally process, and Damien mentioned how he liked being able to think internally. Geralee was much like Emily, and I was much like Damien in that way in our situations. But what if we end up in a situation where our spouse can't or won't care for you? I'm wondering if anyone has suggestions. What would be good things to do in such a scenario?
You're both grieving the same thing, but your spouse doesn't care about how you're going through it.
Yeah, grieving about the same thing, but for whatever reason or another, your spouse seems unable to help you.
I would say find a friend, a solid friend that you can trust and share.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you have a church family, that's a good place to go. But yeah,
go to the church, find a friend. I would add some wisdom to this. If you're trying to talk to a friend because your spouse won't talk to you, make sure it's a friend of the same gender as you. That's just some wisdom, because in a vulnerable time like that, there is greater opportunity for emotional attachment or things like that. What caveat might that come with? The finding a friend.
We probably wouldn't want to do that consciously in spite of your spouse, or as like a one-to-one replacement of your spouse, like maybe leaving room for your spouse to grow in helping you. Instead of shutting down to them and becoming resentful. Like, I think every situation would be quite different, but say it's a situation where the husband's actually just negligent in his duties to care for his wife, and he's obviously hurting but shut down and refuses to care for his wife. She might want to go to an elder and say, would you mind having a coffee with my husband, right? And you know, I know he wants to help me, but he's just unable, or we really depend on the situation, I suppose.
I really like what you added there about finding an elder, because it could even just be something that, like, hey, are you willing to be my spouse's friend too in that situation? It doesn't just necessarily have to be the elder correcting them, right? Now, I think that's important too, of course. But
like, if you're both Christians and one of them just doesn't know what to do with that, probably you both agree to sitting down together with somebody. You know?
Yeah. But you mentioned what I wanted to get at there, Jordan, which is, doesn't matter how good of a friend this person is, they don't replace your spouse. It could be very easy to emotionally detach from someone if they're not necessarily there for you as you want them to be. And like I said, attached to someone else, it's the same reason you don't want to have a friend of the opposite gender as you in this situation being your primary counselor, right? So yeah, we don't want an imbalance where one person's running to their friend and even checking out on their spouse. Like, maybe while your spouse isn't helping you, you could still help them, right? And so we don't want to just check out. And there is marriage. We heard about this today. Family is kind of like our relationship with God. And so marriage is supposed to reflect the relationship between Christ and the church. And so that means there absolutely will be sacrifice in a marriage context. And so if Christ sacrificed himself for the church, it might be we need to sacrifice ourselves in a way for our spouse, right? And so even Christ did that while we were still his enemies. And you could consider in that light, if your spouse is being an enemy or they're not helping you as a friend, we still make sacrifice for them. We've already talked about a lot of the ways adults grieve, but children grieve differently than adults do. And Jordan, you asked a few months ago, how do we help children to grieve? We're going to talk a bit about that. Children often feel different emotions than adults do. Sometimes they actually need help being told how to grieve well. We talked about this last month a bit, but I think this is why it's a good time for people outside of the family to step in and help with children. Because if this is this grief is hitting the whole family, chances are there will be times where the parents just don't have the capacity to care for the children as they need to be cared for. I'm just curious, did you guys feel that at all in terms of caring for your children during your situation, Damien and Emily?
I think just because like our girls are so young, they mm-hmm. don't fully understand. So like they say that they miss Constance, but like they didn't really know her. Mm-hmm. Like maybe they miss her, but they don't know exactly what that means. So I think maybe their emotional needs aren't quite as high as like an older kid who would be grieving.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll say that they're sad because Constance died, and so we like to remind them, like, it's okay to be sad about that. That is a sad thing that's happened, but mm-hmm. you don't have to stay there either. Like, when you're not sad, then you don't be sad.
Okay. Yeah. So some of the things a child might feel is guilt. Why might that be?
They might think that it was their fault somehow.
Yeah, in some way in their kid brain makes total sense to them.
Yeah.
It's their fault, even though it's not even close mm-hmm. to being their fault. Yeah.
If you're going to blame someone, you may as well just blame Adam.
They might feel anger. Do we want to guess why that might be? There's probably a few reasons they might feel that. But
yeah, why did this have to happen? Or yeah, anger. And also, you can feel like, especially when you're older, you wish you could have done more when that person was with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's those feelings of the missing is totally different.
I think a child is confronted with so many more, they see their friends with their parents way more than, you know, like, you wouldn't see me with my mom near as often as Callie would see her friends at school or whatever with their parents, right? And so it's just, it could rise like an anger of jealousy there, and so just a lot more opportunity to be angry, I think.
Mm-hmm. They might even be angry with, if someone died, they might be angry with that person because they had to go and they caused all this change in their family, right? Things blew up because they had to go. They might feel angry with that person. This is just I should have said this at the start here. This is just an exercise in trying to understand what's going on. It's just putting us in that place where we're thinking it through. Why might they be feeling this way? Because we should also try to understand our children if they are grieving, right?
I've often heard people say too, and I think of my sisters, because I lost my dad when he was young, and they were still young. They like, there was times when they were mad at God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they were still at home. And so that was very hard on them.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember hearing a story of someone who said they were young and they prayed to God that he would heal their uncle who was dying, and he didn't heal him, and so she renounced her faith because of that. Yeah. At quite a young age, too. They might feel fear or anxiety. Why might that be?
They might feel fear that somebody else is going to die. Or
mm-hmm.
Especially if they're city kids, they might not be used to death as a experience, like, period. I think in the past, like, kids who grew up in the country or just before urbanization or even just before modern medicine, things like that, death as an experience was a lot more normal. But it's very possible for kids to get into their teens and really have never been touched by a death at all. So then that experience is just so disorienting, and we just respond with fear to things that we don't know.
Yeah, I think of that too, because even in First Nations culture, at the funerals, they'll have an open casket, and children are able to go and see. It's normal in the First Nation communities to see death around them. But like Chris said, if there's a higher population, or even just a culture difference, people might not just experience being around death at all if in their formative years. Why might they feel anxious about expressing their feelings to another person?
Well, did they feel like they want to be tough or
mm-hmm.
can do this? Or I don't know. But I think anybody feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to, you know, we want to be brave in front of our friends and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
How about for expressing to their family? I think they might be upset or fearful or anxious that if they bring up that they're sad about something that's affecting the whole family, they might be worried that they'll only make others sad too. They're worried that others don't want to be sad if they don't want to be sad, so I better not make that pass it on, right? So I think that's why it's so important that we tell our children, if this happens in our families, that it's okay to cry, and it's actually a good thing. It's like Damien said, it's like, if you're sad, it's okay. Let's be sad. And if you're happy, that's okay. You don't need to feel bad for not being sad at the time. And another difference with how children grieve a lot of the time is sometimes they just need to take a break from the big emotions they're feeling. Adults, they could carry on a whole day just feeling really rough, but children, sometimes they just need a break. So they might be really sad 1 minute and playing the next, like nothing's wrong. And that's okay too. It's just that sometimes we even do that as adults. We, like Damien said, it's some hours come his way and then it's done. So let's think about how can we help grieving children to grieve well?
I think Emily and Damien said it well by talking about it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And sharing. Yeah, sharing stories and could be memories, it could be being free to do that.
Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah, definitely talking to them.
And I think doing it on their own schedule. Like if they're not feeling sad or thinking about it, then you don't feel the need to bring it up. But if they're talking about it and want to, then by all means, that's your opportunity too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I was a child in that situation, like just spending intentional time that's not occupied with, like maybe going and doing a walk or a hike or I don't know, like doing something together where there's maybe space where talk, like talking could happen if it came up, but just like time spent. And I'm guessing that some kids might not even have words to necessarily express what they are feeling and stuff at times and probably just feel all mixed up inside. So I think, yeah, just lengths of time where they can just even muddle it out somehow, mm-hmm. or helping them make sense of what might be going on too.
I think to add on to that, like just playing with them, kids reveal what they're thinking about through their play and how they're playing, or even in arts and crafts, the things they draw, the things they make. I think there's lots that can clue you into how they're feeling in those things. And I think you could even just play with the purpose of, or do arts and crafts with the purpose of, let's express how we're feeling through this play or this activity. Yeah. And I think that's so helpful too, because it just lets kids be kids still while they're grieving. How else might we help children through the grieving process?
I think, as parents, we just really have to fight the temptation we feel to just try to help our kids feel better right away, make it all better. Like, that's just so strong. Like, if they're crying, we just kind of do whatever. We kiss it better, even though kissing doesn't do anything to help things go away. Like, that's just such an instinct. And so I think we can help our kids develop emotional maturity really early on by just saying, yeah, like, that hurts, that's hard, that's okay. Like, it's okay to be sad. We can show that ourselves. We can model that. I'm sad right now. That's okay. We can let them see that. We can help them sit with that. We can even help them feel sad if they need to, you know, show them the picture or have the conversation. So I just... that goes against a lot of the grain for us, and so we really have to fight at least for some of us cultural assumptions that good equals happy all the time.
Yeah, that really.
I know when my mom died, there was someone who was, I want to be careful because this is recorded, but someone who was very, you would have thought would have been close to her, who would have been there, and she was a young person, and, but her response was, at least this is what was relayed, was like, oh, so a funeral is just where people are really sad? Like, why would I want to go there where everyone's sad? And her parents said, okay, well, you don't have to come. Now, there may have been more that I'm not aware of. That was just sort of how it was shared to me. And I just think that was a real missed opportunity. Like, if that had been... yeah, I just think that could have been an opportunity to say, yeah, people are going to be really sad there. And that's because someone that we love is gone. And we should be sad about that. So you should come and feel sad with everybody, and that's healthy for us.
Yeah, just thinking back on the first workshop, talking about how grief is like a fruit or a vitamin where we get nutrients we can't get anywhere else to grow in the Lord. That means one of the ways we help them, our children, is let them grieve. Don't short circuit straight to, okay, you're happy again. Like we said that time, like, this is God's process. We shouldn't rush it. Because then you just get incomplete results, and it just puts things off further. And Chris, you also mentioned modeling grief for them. Again, this kind of goes against our instincts. Parents don't want to be upset around their children. Maybe you need to grieve around your child too in the same situation. Ideally you're doing it in a healthy way and you're teaching them to grieve by their observing you. And you could even help them out through this. It could be something simple as saying to them, today I saw something that would happen actually frequently for me when my uncle died was my dad would say, he saw someone who looked like his uncle and it reminded him of him. Or actually a lot of times people would come up to him, see someone who looked like his brother and get excited for a second and then the realization sets in, he's someone else. But he would mention this at home and he's like, did anything remind you of Uncle David today? Just working through that process, and that's very organic too. But it's modeling, hey, it's okay to be reminded of this person and to think about it. And I think that teaches them how to define their emotions. They're able to, last month we talked about engaging with their emotions. You're teaching your children to do that from a young age, to identify what might have caused an emotion and be able to deal with it properly. It lets them know it's okay to cry and to feel that emotion too if you're expressing that around them. How else might we help our children through a grieving process? Or I keep saying our children. It doesn't necessarily have to be our own, too. It could be a child in the church family who needs help. And we could help their parents as well by helping their children. But how else might we help?
I've just been thinking about the journaling thing, and maybe a child isn't capable of or doesn't feel like they're ready to do that or that kind of thing, but even maybe helping document some of those things for them. I'm just like, what is a memory about this person that you wouldn't want to forget, or even documenting those things of like that reminded you of that person that day or something, and just helping them solidify some memories that maybe they don't want to lose by the time they're an adult or something and can go back to and be reminded of, oh, this was what, you know, this person was like and the impact that they had on my life at that time and stuff, but maybe helping them process their thoughts in that way.
We're going through photos, like journaling and photos is a good thing. And sure, it may bring tears, but that's good.
Yeah. And go back to what Damien and Emily shared, that in helping their kids, they were also being helped. So that's a great way even for ourselves as we're helping children, if we're grieving for the same thing. Like, it's also helpful to be honest if we're talking to our children about death at all. A lot of people want to say things like, oh, he just went on a journey, a long journey. or something like that. They want to sugarcoat it. But that's not helpful either. And actually, that could cause problems. It could just be simple as, like, if you're leaving, they might think, oh, they're going on a journey. That's, I wonder what'll happen to them. But I think, yeah, it's important to be honest with our children and communicate still in an age-appropriate way about death. It's not quite the same, but I remember Callie's mom talked to her as she was dying and was very honest with Callie so that she could be prepared. And honestly, that prepared Callie to the point where she probably handled it better than most of her family, because other people were in denial about what happened, and she understood, she was prepared. And so we can be honest about death. It's a good opportunity to share about heaven if it's applicable, and it's trying to think how to say this. I think honesty also just helps them to be able to process better and understand so that they can grieve properly. What might we teach children to help them while they're grieving?
Teach them like truths about God. God is good and he's faithful.
And teach them to seek his help, right? That could be simple as reading your Bible and praying as you grieve in their presence. Again, going back to modeling grief, this is one of the ways we can do it. Our children learn by watching us too. And like you said, Emily, teaching them that God is trustworthy, he is good, and making that a consistent thing. It's not just a one-time thing, I imagine, right? And even just the truth that Jesus will return and he will make things right eventually. Things will be made new. They will be good again. Geralee and I have been teaching Callie to pray when she's sad, because she misses her mom. And we let her know that God does use us as parents, her adopted parents, to comfort her, but also we are not good enough to be relied on our own. God can comfort her way better than we can by ourselves. And so we really encourage her, hey, please just pray, then you can come up, we'll pray for you. but teaching our kids to seek God's help. We still have a bit to talk about on grieving as a family, but we'll take a break and get back to it because the section on social media is a little shorter than otherwise. So we'll take a 10-minute break-ish and come back at 7:45. So before we continue, I wanted to ask Damien and Emily something I forgot to ask you guys when you were sharing. You can just answer from there. In what ways did you help each other through the grief? And maybe even what ways surprised you that you might have had to help? If you don't have an answer to that, that's fine. But Damien, you want to start?
Oh, yes. not the best ways, just because of a naivety, I guess, but one thing I tried to do at least was just to ask what she needed. Obviously, guys and girls are very different. We're wired differently, we think differently, we need different things, we grieve differently, and that means that what we need is different, and so I know what I would want if I was, you know, grieving, but, well, maybe not, but not always. But just so asking, like, what do you need from me? Like, you want me here? You want me to hold your hand, give you a hug, you want me to leave? Things like that. At least I try to. I don't know. Good. prayer as well. Lots of praying, because again, as a husband and as the leader, my instinct is to put a wrench on it and fix it, but I can't do that in this situation, so giving it to the one who can and who is frankly far better qualified than I am and knows way more than I do, so lots of prayer in the background.
I think, like for me, like Damien was saying, he processes things maybe a bit more internally, so just making sure that I'm giving him the space for that, not like assuming that he doesn't feel sad just because he's not telling me that he feels sad. That was, I don't know, probably one of the bigger ways. Or like I tried to suggest things for you to do, like journaling or...
yeah, I'm not much of a crier. That's not because I think that men don't cry. It's just because that's not where I go. But those 2 days I definitely did cry a lot. And it was good to cry. Not that it was fun or enjoyable, but afterward it felt good to get that off. It felt like each tear was a thought or, you know, words that couldn't be expressed. So, that's my last thing to say.
Kind of going off of what you said, though, yeah, like a meaningful time of us grieving together was probably in the hospital, like just before we released her to the funeral home, and just being alone, together with her. Crying and hugging and holding her and just feeling that together was very meaningful.
I don't know if she was supposed to, but when the nurse came back and from bringing Constance away, she was just beet red, clearly was crying. And I don't know if they're allowed to, because I feel like it's unprofessional, but I really appreciated that even. Just, I don't know. That was nice.
You mentioned praying. I think of when, I forget what chapter in Genesis it is, but when Rebecca's grieving that she can't have a child, and Isaac prays for her that she would have one. You look at that passage closer, and he was praying for multiple years. And so I just think of how pivotal that is in how spouses can help each other and help their families.
Yeah. I remember what I was going to say. This goes both ways, but like, if I notice Emily, or sometimes or if she tells me that, you know, and she doesn't use very many words, but I know that she's thinking about Constance more than usual, that it's, you know, I kind of take over what needs to be done around the house and vice versa. If I'm feeling down, then Emily kind of steps up too, so just... yeah, giving each other space when we need and helping around the house in those ways.
Well, thank you for sharing even more. I think about managing a grieving family Now, Geralee and I didn't have Callie yet. When we had our situations, it was just us two. And now I think about, what if something was to hit our whole family? And I think, I don't know how I would deal with all that. It would feel like too much, for sure. So, when it comes to managing a grieving family, I can't overemphasize the importance of seeking God's help daily in this process. praying that God would give strength that is needed to even just be there for your family. I'm sure you guys prayed for that. And just thinking about, again, how family is a gift from God. And God's given us our family, and He's given us this grief. His plan is perfect. It's not like we can handle it if we rely on Him through prayer and asking Him to sustain us. And I don't know that it necessarily applies. The way I think about it, there's a quote from Luther. He said, "I have so much to do today that I shall devote 2 hours to prayer." And I hear that and I think, I have so much to do. I need to ask God for strength to do all these things. And so I think if there's anything that's most important, and I wonder if you would agree with this, Damon and Emily, it's that praying and seeking God's help daily through that process. And like you guys said, also communicating as a family. Here's what I need today. How can I help you? Taking over things that need to be taken over to keep things going well in the home. That's massively important. And not just praying for ourselves, but praying with our families as well. Coming together and being able to encourage each other in that process. What might be some signs that your family's grieving in a healthy manner?
You're able to talk about it.
You're talking with each other, definitely. You're not shutting yourself up in your room all the time. It's okay to do that for periods of time, but not all the time.
Also, it's good to hear laughter when you're sharing memories. You know, you're also sharing funny times. You're not just... That to me... you're not making fun of the people. It's just that you're happy. You're having happy memories. And those are good, too. Those are really good.
Yeah,
I think they're very helpful.
Going back to, hey, if you're happy, you don't need to feel guilty that you're not sad. Grieving doesn't necessarily mean you're just sad all the time.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I think if people are encouraging each other, even to grieve, I think that's really helpful. Letting people know, hey, it's okay to cry in this house. And just being an encouragement and a comfort for each other in that way. And I think finally, for signs that your family's grieving in a healthy way, it's that people are still going to God in your family. They're maintaining spiritual health. They're staying in the Word. Maybe it's not as in-depth or as much as normal, but they're still spending time with God, who's the best source of comfort. So before I close this part of the workshop and move on to social media, I want to point back to lament, which that was one of the topics of the workshop 2 months ago. Just brief explanation. It's praying to God, being honest with Him, boldly requesting that He'll help you, and trusting Him on the basis of His character in the whole process, and letting that bring you closer to Him through it. And I think what's great about lament is that it's not just a solo thing. You can do it with your family. And we talked about modeling grief. It teaches your children how they can lament and talk to God as well and be honest with how they're feeling. So with that, we'll move on to social media. just to pull the room, I'm wondering what people think of first when they think about social media as it relates to people grieving. For using it, for seeing people grieve on there, what just your initial thoughts?
It could be helpful, but it's maybe not the best idea.
Could be helpful, but it's not the best idea?
Yeah.
I think in some ways, if you have a tragedy or something, it could be an easy way to let a lot of people know at once. Mm-hmm. Maybe like Facebook, if you've got friends from who live all across the country or where farther than that too, and just maybe you weren't in touch as closely anymore, or you just still benefit from knowing that person passed or that kind of thing. I think it could be useful in some of those ways.
I was thinking it could probably be an unhealthy escape, so.
Yeah, definitely.
You're just scrolling for hours because you don't feel like doing anything else.
Yeah.
I have seen people do like maybe milestone posts, like it's been 10 years since, or things like that, reflection posts that were insightful and I think good. I don't know that I've ever seen a great one from someone who's on social media all the time. I think on the end of people who are helping others who grieve, maybe, you know, without any malicious intent or anything, you can feel too soon like you've done your part because you heart reacted and commented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've kind of hit on what we're going to talk about there, Jordan. So before, this is the helping others who grieve part, but before we get there, just I think we know this, but perhaps if we're helping others as well and how they grieve, it could be helpful, a helpful thing maybe to say to them, but just a word for those who post. There are studies that have been done, and there's a correlation between higher social media usage and feelings of loneliness. So, if going back to last month in terms of engaging with our feelings, if let's just say we are the person who's feeling lonely and we're on social media more often than not. We're feeling lonely, we're online most of the time. If we engaged with this feeling of loneliness, we might find that we feel lonely because we're not actually interacting on the level that we need to be with others. And I mean, I think we know this for the most part. Like, what would you rather have with your friend? A 5-minute texting exchange or a face-to-face conversation, right? Personally, in-person conversations are much more enjoyable and helpful to me. I imagine you guys feel the same. Nod your head, shake your head, yeah.
Call is better than
definitely.
Because of the tone of voice and the facial expression that you don't see in the phone.
So, yeah, all this to say, I think if we're grieving and we're considering posting something on Facebook or whatever other social media, about how we're doing that day, just making sure we don't expect more from social media than we'll get. We put a lot of weight, well, I'm interacting with more people, so I should get more, and you don't. it's like you said, Damien, it could be helpful, but it might not be the best. I think in most cases, we would be better served by having a phone call with a trusted friend instead, or reaching out physically to people. And but the draw of social media is that it's so much easier to use. It's a quick, easy way. It's almost like the fast food way of trying to get the nutrients we need. but that being said, we do live in a social media age, and people are going to post, and it's not even necessarily bad all the time. I think milestone posts are fine. It's just a way of reflecting. It's almost like journal writing, and it might help others, right? But so how can we use social media, or how can we use another person's post online as an opportunity to help them as they grieve?
So what we would do is a personal text after that. You see somebody do that, and you see somebody that's grieving, rather than replying on the social media post, go and give a personal text.
Yeah.
Because that just becomes, then you can have a conversation that not the world would read you. You know?
Mm-hmm. this isn't always the case when people post, but we've talked about how it's unhelpful to just throw out a, let me know if you need anything, right? There's a sense for a lot of people, if they're posting something online, that's their call for help. I need something. Sometimes it might be attention. Sometimes it is help. But we're not the determiners of that necessarily. And so... like Hannah said, it's that's where we go and do something else.
Personalized.
Yeah, make it personal. So Hannah, kind of what you're getting at there is, if you see this post, you take that as an opportunity to initiate a conversation or a relationship with that person, right? They've kind of opened the door, and ball's in your court now to talk to them. so, yeah, the key word there is initiate a conversation. Jordan mentioned that some people feel like the heart emoji and a quick comment is enough. But the like button isn't enough. Yeah, and this is an opportunity that we have to start a relationship or conversation with someone else, and that using the words and doing the things that we've already talked about in the sessions leading up to this. So, what are some, what might be another helpful way that we can use social media to help others?
Maybe just really a small practical thing would be, if the person who's grieving has aired some of this on their Facebook, a lot of people just live online now, so being, or even people who aren't online all the time, but they post these milestone posts or whatever, you could use it to find dates for things, so you don't have to ask, and then you can be present after that.
Yep. I think one of the great things about social media and instant messaging is even things simple as if we find a picture of the deceased person, that might be meaningful to the other person. Or in some cases, it is meaningful to them to post, hey, I'm also thinking about this person. But again, I wouldn't let the... It's not like you can wipe your hands. Okay, my work is done. I think by and large, social media is a cheap substitute for our physical presence and connection. And I think of things like Hebrews 10, talking about not neglecting to gather together. There's a physical gathering, and part of the reason for that is so that we can encourage each other and spur one another on to look unto Jesus and to good works, and that includes in grieving. And so I think the simple takeaway for using social media is letting it be a tool to initiate something with other people, a meeting, to do the things we've talked about last month, to say the things we talked about the first couple workshops. It's just a beginning. It's not an end. And even that being said, there's so many better ways to interact with people than to just keep it online. Just thinking really practically, what might be some of those ways? What we talked about, a phone call. Yeah, we talked about
sending a card.
Yeah, sending a card.
Yeah. I think the best social media is an on-ramp for real communication.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
a great reminder. Oh yeah, I should talk to that person. Or a great, hey, why don't we talk? Or it's a good on-ramp.
Yeah. And it's excellent even for if you hear about somebody who you haven't talked to in a while, oh, they're going through that, I better find them. And it's so much easier now to find people and interact with them and even reconnect. It's like, hey, I've heard that you're going through this. I want to be here for you. Yeah. I like the way you said that. It's at its best, it's an on-ramp to effective means of helping them in their grief.
And I think that can work the other way. Like, as a grieving person, I think I can see a good use case for social media within that same assumption. Like, to share a post, you know, the picture of the person that you're missing, and like that might be something that. Like, let's say you find yourself in a spot where you're just grieving, you feel like you need to share, you're not sure who to call up exactly. That's kind of the thing with social media, is it when someone go, like, you kind of have that permission to share what you're thinking about just there. So if I'm feeling sad because I'm missing someone, and I know that my friend is there for me, there might still be that question, like if I just text one of them up and say, hey, I'm missing this person right now, really could talk to someone, that they might be busier, they might not, you know, like there's, whereas just, I can just post a picture and say I'm missing, you send it out there, and you kind of have the permission to do that, as long as you do that, aren't assuming that, you know, just the people who click the caring emoji on Facebook, that's it. If that is then used in reciprocation as an on-ramp, where then you actually get the text or you get the phone call or whatever. So I don't know, but I guess what I'm trying to maybe poke at here is, or sketch out, is that I think it's not just a tool to help other people. I can see there being cases where someone is using it as a tool to process their grief, And as a tool in the toolbox, there's probably a good spot for it. I think social media is a very bad tool if it's the only tool you have.
Mm-hmm.
But as a tool in the toolbox, I don't know, what does that sound like? Does that check out?
Yeah, that checks out. I've heard it, like, people, they might just need to remember even who's in their corner. And so posting it and seeing, like, even though it's cheap, seeing the caring emoji does something, right? And, but yeah, using it with the expectation that it is an on-ramp, even as the grieving person. And like, I've seen plenty of posts where it's like, I'm just not feeling good today. And then someone says, hey, I'm here to message or call in the comments. That could be a good way of just finding out who is there to talk to right now. But like I said, like we've been saying here, it's a beginning, not an end. And I like that language. It's a tool in your toolbox. It's not the only tool. And I think if it's your only tool, you're going to be left feeling lonelier than ever. Something that's been said by people who grieve and they've posted online is people reaching out is helpful to them through that media. But nothing beats a handwritten note and people actually physically reaching out. it's a shorter little part, but social media is part of our lives, and a lot of the foundation has come up before in the workshop for how we could interact with people instead, but social media is in our lives. We could think of it as, like Chris said there, an on-ramp to better communication. And so I just pray that we won't be people who click the like button and we say our work is done, but that we would initiate relationships and conversations with people when we see things online. And yeah, just all this to say, like, let's not settle for one of the worst methods of helping people when we have so much better things that we can do. And it takes more sacrifice than simply tapping a button on your smartphone or on your computer, but it's well worth it. And I pray that we will not use it as replacement, but just a simple way to encourage us to action. And with that, I'll pray, and the workshop will be done. Father, thank you that we were able to get together. Lord, thank you for what we were able to hear from Damien and Emily. God, I pray that just throughout this month we would be able to consider them as they're coming up on the 1-year anniversary of Constance's passing. Lord, I praise you that you have worked in this church to have been such a help to them. And God, I praise you for the brother and sister that the Newdorfs are to us. Lord, I pray that we would not seclude ourselves within our family when we grieve, but first and foremost, come to you. Lord, may we remember that our family points to you and that they are a gift to us as we're grieving. And Lord, help us be good stewards of our families and their grief as we grieve together, should that time come. And God, I Thank you for all the tools that we have to interact with each other when there is grief and we are helping others. God, I pray that you would just help us in how we look at technology and social media and how it can be used. Lord, may we seek to honor you and honor your people through it. God, help us to be people of action rather than slothfulness with media such as this. And God, I pray that you would just use everything that we heard today for your honor and your glory. In your son's name I pray. Amen. Cool. Thank you guys for coming. Next month, we're going to be looking at forgiveness and regret when someone we love has passed, or even other things. It doesn't necessarily have to be a death, but if something's happened that's causing us grief, forgiveness after someone's gone away, or regret that we can't express, as well as how we can talk with grieving people about heaven and hell. Those will be the topics for next month. So God be with you guys as we're learning to be better brothers and sisters to each other and better able to help others as they're suffering.